Welcome to the One Speed MMA podcast with yours truly, Justin Smith and
Carson Wood.
Hey, man.
Hey.
Seems like we haven't been apart for too long.
No, we haven't.
Usually it seems like when we podcast, it's been like a month.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And this week we had some hangouts to discuss some things in Espanol.
Yeah, we decided not to post a Spanish podcast because we need to get through it a little bit more.
You got
to
refine that a little bit.
Yeah,
but it was fun though. It was fun to get back into the Spanish swing of things,
to actually read words in Spanish that you would have never used based on and fighting terms.
Yeah, there's so much because the way that we learn Spanish, you learn different vocabularies and parts, and so up next is fight and sporting vocabulary because it was a rough go.
Yeah, no, it was, but we'll eventually get there. It'll be worth doing about 30 minutes.
It was fun though.
Spanish.
It was fun just to look what word I found. It was a good time.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a good time. You know what was a give and take time was the Titan FC fight card last night.
I was playing Destiny. I was deep into Destiny. You're going to have to tell me what happened.
Well, I watched the first part of it because my wife works on Saturday, so I got to watch a little bit. And then when she got home, I was cut off. So, she actually is my only attachment to the world, other than, I guess, you. So, if she's not like, hey, turn off fights, I think I would just watch UFC Fight Pass all day, every day. and then watch Titan FC and all of the other cards. One of the funniest things, actually, before we get into the card that I was reading on Twitter was all of the hardcore MMA fans on Twitter giving the not-so-hardcore MMA fans a hard time for saying, no UFC this weekend, looks like I'm going to go do something else, or no fights on this weekend, I'm going to go do something else. And they were like, no fights on this weekend, you must be an MMA fan. And there was actually the Pure Evil podcast or whatever that kid's name is. He was like, oh, there's fights on today? And I thought he was being sarcastic. And I said, sarcastically, I tweeted him back saying, oh, if you were a real MMA fan, putting MMA in quotations, then he would have known that there was a Titan FC card on. And so there's definitely
it's MMA fans. Hey, shut up, computer. yeah, never get into soccer.
No games on today. What do you mean? The third league is
you would if that
league is on.
If that's how you define being a fan, is watching everything that the sport puts out, you cannot be a soccer fan because you would literally never sleep.
Yeah, there's a lot of soccer. That's now that I have the streaming site that I use, it's very much that way. Mm-hmm. Where I go to work and there's a Champions League Cup on, and then a Mexican league will start, and then there's a Spanish league or an Italian league that will start. Yeah, there always seems to be something on.
I guess you can make an argument for at least knowing that a fight's on, but you're getting into Titan FC.
Well, the reason I originally got into Titan FC is because Steven Seiler was fighting for one of their belts. Steven Seiler obviously being from around here, and then it being on Fight Pass. It's very interesting to talk about, and one of the things, the future things that we're going to get into here on the podcast is the UFC as a promotion and whether they're going to sell, and obviously being a monopsony and different things like that, where there's no, and Fight Pass is definitely one of those things where they're giving everyone this opportunity to watch these fights that they wouldn't necessarily usually see, or you would have to pay $9.99, like Stillfist fights here in Utah. You would have to have paid $9.99 to watch it online on some crappy stream. Mm-hmm. And now we can actually go watch it on Fight Pass. I can almost guarantee you that there is more viewers on Fight Pass for the last couple events than they've had in a long period of time. Mm-hmm. And so it's really great for the sport, and it's great for these undercard guys, and I wanted to get into three guys to watch. But it's very interesting because everyone has such a love-hate relationship with the UFC, but then you see all of these little regional promotions that are now getting, broadcasted. I would have had to find some online stream somewhere or paid $8 for fights I really didn't care to see, whereas now they're free on Fight Pass. And if I can't watch them last night, I can watch them now. And so Fight Pass is doing a really good job.
No, Fight Pass, I mean, and actually kudos to the UFC for being, one, for getting a library that they can use, getting Pride and all of those
Strikeforce
ready. So it was interesting so that they could build off of that. Because I don't know of any other sports platform that's doing something like that. there's no, I mean, you can find most of the things online though anyways. So if you wanted to see the 81 point Kobe game or the, I was looking up the, what's his face, Miller, when he hit like the 8 points in 13th, Tracy McGrady, like all those ones, like I was just watching different highlights. And so you can find them on YouTube, but this is a lot better service.
Yeah, you used to have to watch ESPN Classic to watch the Jazz Bulls from, you know, the 90s.
Mm-hmm. And you didn't know when that was on. And this is nice. I mean, you can, if you want to like just study up on, and that's the other thing too, is if you want to look up on a specific fighter, mm-hmm. because if you wanted to, the Bulls are in the playoffs this week. If you want to go watch the Bulls to see what they used to play like in the playoffs, it's a completely different team. But this one, it's like, I want to see...
Mine was Aljamain Sterling. So when his contract dispute was up, I was familiar with his name, but not like really his fighting style mm-hmm. or like him being top 10. And I actually went back through and watched a lot of his first fights because they were on Fight Pass.
Well, a lot of the... And we'll get into the Titan. I didn't mean to jump into this UFC card, but in particular, if you wanted to look at the... Andre Arlovsky, Alistair Overeem, their previous fights yeah. coming up.
All the way to Strikeforce
yeah,
with Alistair
Overeem. Yeah, all the way back to Strikeforce. Arlovsky was in Strikeforce too, wasn't he?
He went to Affliction.
Is that what it was?
He might have been in Strikeforce, but he bounced all over the place.
I know he was on Bully Beatdown.
Was he really?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know he was on Bully Beatdown. I knew Eddie Alvarez was, and I knew some of the other guys were.
Well, yeah, he was on. He was on against a big... I didn't know that. Yeah, he was in Strikeforce too.
Yeah.
He went from Affliction, like you said, Strikeforce Pro Elite 1,
and then
World Series of Fighting. Wow, man, he would be the guy to ask about promotion.
He came back after the World Series of Fighting. That's what it was. So Affliction went under. I think he went back to Strikeforce for a little bit. They got gobbled up, but he was on like a 3-fight losing streak. Like that was when he was Robbie Lawler at that moment mm-hmm. where he went somewhere else and just didn't do well. And now has come back, and we can get into that a little bit later. But he, he's been around...
And that's kind of the point, though. You can go back and watch a lot of even his old fights.
Speaking of which, yeah, I just watched him fight an unknown Brazilian. I can't remember what his name was, right after he lost the belt to Tim Sylvia. And that was on the same card as Tito Ortiz, Chuck Liddell. And I didn't know that. Michael Bisping's first fight on pay-per-view after he won the Ultimate
Cruz?
Fighter. That would be him. This fight, though, if you haven't seen it, just real quick to break this down, and most people probably aren't going to care about this, but there's a ref stoppage, right? So what ended up happening is Andre Arlovsky was in the less dominant position. This Brazilian dude wanted to keep it on the ground, right? Mm-hmm. So this is what happens.
He's a black belt.
Yeah, so they're in this like the weird like half leg lock where both of them kind of had the other one's legs. Mm-hmm. So he stops and he's like, "Hey, Andre Arlovsky, you keep doing something wrong. We're gonna stand you up." The Brazilian guy's like, "No, we're good, we're good, we're good." And so the ref goes, "Okay," because he had the dominant position, he let him have it. He steps back, Mario Yamasaki steps back and goes, "Go." And right as he says go, Arlovsky, they showed it, is waiting, and he's just waiting, and as soon as he says go, he goes boom and knocks the dude out, not out cold, but knocks him well enough that the dude falls back, and then he just starts beating him. And it was one of those things like protect yourself at all times, and it was kind of cheap. At the same time, I understood, but he was just waiting for that ref to say go, and as soon as he said it, he just plowed him. It was super interesting to see. But yeah, no, we'll get more into Arlovsky. But yeah, the fact that it's on Fight Pass, and I can go back and watch Tito Ortiz versus Chuck Liddell and Michael Bisping's first pay-per-view card and Forrest Griffin get beat by Keith Jardine, you know, and I can just sit down on a Saturday while I'm doing something else and have it play in the background is really cool. And I mean,
the other nice thing about having fights ready to stream too, and I didn't mean this for
no, you're
this
good.
To be a commercial for Fight Pass, but again,
if they want to sponsor us,
yeah, hey,
onespeedmma@gmail.com, Fight Pass.
We're very willing. But the other nice thing too is
we'll do it for free, Fight Pass.
Fights let you also, you can either do one for 15 minutes, 25 minutes, or you can find something that you like if you don't have a ton of time.
Yep.
You can just find something that you wanted to watch really quick, like a first rounder or something like that. It's a lot more accommodating than even if you wanted to do other sports. So I mean like Fight Pass.
One of the most interesting things that I saw on Fight Pass, very quickly, and I guess we can get back into this when we get into the being able to judge the round per round as they come out. But anyway, I think one of the reasons it took certain fights to come to it took certain fights so long to come out on Fight Pass is because none of the original music is on Fight Pass. So when Tito Ortiz walks out, it doesn't have Tito Ortiz's walkout music. It's got music that they've dubbed over his. It's dubbed over the music, but dubbed under the announcing. It's really weird. Like when you listen to it, you're like, it just doesn't quite sound right, but the announcing's still there fine. Mm-hmm. Because they've had to dub out some of the music, I think, for copyright infringements, and they didn't want to have to pay... They didn't want to have to pay rights, copyright, mm-hmm. and trademark rights every time someone watched that on Fight Pass.
That's interesting that they put that much into it, though, because Twitch, they have that auto, like, finding software that'll just erase it, and your whole channel's muted if you play anything that's copyrighted.
But, yeah.
But, so tell me more about Titan FC. You said three people in particular that you wanted to look out for.
So there's three people that I really like. So Jose Torres, or Jose Shorty Torres, if you guys are familiar with Titan FC, he fought on 38 and 37. And I thought he had. So 37 was 8 weeks ago. And he's already back and fighting on another card. And so he had 28 amateur fights. He's down at Winklejohn now. I think he's originally from Chicago. He's 2-0. Professional, but because he's had so many amateur fights, apparently it's really hard to find him a fight because nobody wants to fight that guy. No one with the same record wants to fight someone with 28 amateur fights. So he fought an 8-8 Brazilian. The Brazilian was down to fight. He did a really good job, but I mean, when you're 8-8, I'm guessing they just made it worth his time to come in and fight. And so they both did a good job. Jose Torres looked really good. He got taken down a couple times. And showed dominant top position, different things like that. So he's definitely a kid to watch out of Winklejohn. And once again, Chicago. I don't know where he trains in Chicago. The disappointment of the night, kid named Peter Pettis. They kept calling him Pettis. Peter Pettis. Kid comes out, looks like he's in really good shape. Has yellow hair, curly yellow hair on the top of his head, so he stands out. He has one of those fighting
Lannister.
Styles. Yep. He has a fighting style like Venom Page or Anderson Silva, where he'll keep his hands down and kind of throw them, or he'll keep one up and one down. And the most disappointing part is he started losing this fight. The other kid he was fighting was also 8-0, and the kid put his opponent Roca played it really well. Because what he would do is he would strike, and then he would back out. And he just showed to be the more aggressive fighter because the Pettis kid was just trying to counter-strike him. And he wasn't allowing it. He would go in, land a couple, and he would back up. And even when he was down in the third round, so he lost the first round. He won the second round by basically a takedown. Mm-hmm. And then the third round was up for grabs, and he just didn't do anything. He didn't attack. And he looked flashier, and he looked like he looked like he had like a Uriah Hall like flashy knockout in him, and then he just didn't do anything. He legitimately didn't attack, and he lost himself the fight and his undefeated record, and really he lost himself like the respect of that way of fighting. Like Michael Venom Page does a really good job, kind of like Anderson Silva at the end of his career, where it was like, okay, Anderson, like his last fight with Bisping, like you can win this, you just have to do something, and that's he didn't do a thing. So really disappointing. He looked like, I'm guessing, hopefully he learns from it and comes back. And then the third one was Bilal Muhammad, who fought Steve Carl. Steve Carl, ex Tough, was the actual champion. He beat him in the fourth, and he outpointed him. When he was taken down, he would scramble up. He looked really good. And they were saying that his contract might actually be up. And if it is, I'm guessing he'll get picked up by Bellator or WSOF or even potentially be on, the undercard of the UFC. So he's, I think, 9-0 now. And he beat Steve Carl, who's a Tough alum. So he never really made it into the UFC. But he wasn't supposed to win. Carl was the favorite. But so those were the three most noticeable and talkable fights. That's terrible words right there that I just made up. But anyway, the rest of the card, a lot of decisions and a lot of kind of boring fights. A lot of these young kids are really imitating the champion fighters, which makes a ton of sense. But there was his name was Bice, and he looked very much like Dominic Cruz, but the same thing. He just wasn't. He wasn't active enough, and he wasn't landing enough punches. So you got all of these young kids that are imitating their favorite fighters that are champions, but they're not. They're fighting too defensively, and what a lot of them are just trying to save their records. They don't want to be 3-1. They don't want to be you know, 4-2, and it's like, you know what, you have to go out there and fight. You can't just dance around. You can't look like a champion and imitate a champion and not fight, because those champions got to be champions by fighting, and then they started dancing around to save their belts.
I was trying to think if there was anybody that didn't, but I mean, pretty much Dominic Cruz and I was going to say GSP, they both had finishes beforehand, and even they lost. This is, I mean, I wouldn't...
GSP's fighting style changed very much after he lost to Matt Serra.
My thing is, and I guess this is maybe why I'm not a fighter, I have the wrong mentality, but trying to protect, like, perfect records and things like that, it's pretty much an impossibility in this sport.
Yeah.
There's just too many ways to get finished. You have to be too good at too many different things to not lose. There's too many different ways to lose. So, I mean, greatness, if you can go undefeated, it's kind of like I said about the 155. If you can go undefeated, like, you're the real deal. But, like, pretty much anybody in any MMA promotion, I feel like if you go undefeated in it, you're doing something right. But I just don't think it's really a reality. I think you should just go out and fight and try to get finishes and things like that. But
if you're within the top five of a division in the UFC and you haven't lost, you're not fighting the right people. So I look at Conor McGregor. I mean, he did beat Chad Mendes, but Chad Mendes had a very short camp, and you know, everyone was said he's going to struggle against wrestlers, and then he did. You look at, I mean, Jose Aldo did really well. Anderson Silva did really well. And that was kind of a different time, but we discuss this all the time. If you're top five,
Demetrius Johnson's pretty much the only one that's done it, right?
Mm-hmm. Dominic Cruz, since the champions, really. I mean, it really seems like it's only the champions that have taken a 5 or 6 fight win streak. But look at RDA at 155. I mean, the gauntlet of 155. He lost a lot at the beginning of the UFC career, and then he came back and he's on a run. But it's only so long. Like Chris Weidman, who was undefeated, and then...
MMA is about runs, not records.
Yep.
I mean, obviously your record does matter because you have to get looked at by promotions and things like that, but...
You're not going to... I mean, look at Ryan Bader. He was undefeated until he finally ran into John Jones. Mm-hmm. Chris Weidman was finally undefeated. He was undefeated until he ran into Luke Rockhold. Luke Rockhold got KO'd by Vitor Belfort, and his record even... I mean, he was the Strikeforce champion, I believe.
Isn't there 3 Strikeforce champions right now?
Yeah.
The top 3?
Luke Rockhold, DC, and...
Verdum, right?
Yeah, Verdum.
Yeah.
But Verdum was awful in Strikeforce as compared now. Since he's been in the UFC, he's looked a lot better. And it's weird to me.
He beat Fedor.
Yeah. But I mean, when he fought Alistair Overeem, he looked awful in the tournament.
Strikeforce?
Yep.
Was one juicing and one wasn't in that one?
No. So I actually went back and watched this fight too, because I was like, wait, I forgot that these guys fought in the Grand Prix. So Verdum armbarred Fedor, and he wouldn't stand and strike with Alistair Overeem. He kept going to his back. And so Alistair Overeem was winning in the striking. Mm-hmm. And so Alistair Overeem pulled a Damian Maia, and he just kept falling to his back. So anytime he got knocked down, he just fell to his back, and he'd want Alistair Overeem to follow him in. And he didn't. And so Alistair Overeem outpointed him, and it really got annoying, and to the point where I lost a lot of respect for Verdum, because I was like, good thing this is Strikeforce, because if he would have tried to pull something like this in the UFC, like, he'd be a pretty ostracized. Damian Maia still looked down on for almost 7 years ago when he did it against Anderson Silva.
Luckily, though, Verdum, I mean, unlike Maia or...
Nobody saw the Strikeforce fight.
Well, I was going to say, from then on, he has...
He's got knocked
some of
there.
The best hands in... I mean, him and, like, Stipe are both kind of... It's going to be interesting to see that fight, because they're both not strikers, but they use their striking very well. It's going to be a good fight.
There was no one that anyone really cared about coming back from Strikeforce. Robbie Lawler, because just his name, Nick Diaz and Alistair Overeem were really... And DC. Those are really the only ones that, like, people were like, hey, yeah, these guys are going to do well.
Oh, so 4 Strikeforce champions? I didn't know Robbie fought in Strikeforce. I knew that he left the UFC.
Oh, yeah, no, he did, yeah.
I didn't know that. So there's 4.
Yeah.
Shit.
Which is weird, because in Strikeforce, none of them seem to really try. And now they're all kicking ass. Yeah, no, so Rockhold, yeah, the heavier weights are all Strikeforce, which is pretty interesting. And so one thing that I wanted to discuss, so watching the Titan FC card and watching the old UFC card, the Tito Ortiz, Chuck Liddell card, there was actually a UFC, or sorry, an MMA expert, quotation marks I'm making right here, that were given, they were giving who they scored the round to and why and what score that they were giving at the end of each round. And they did it in Titan FC, and they did it in the really old UFCs. Eddie Bravo was actually the one giving out the scores. And I thought it was really interesting to see him, to see them score round by round. And I really, really enjoyed it, because you could be like, oh, I thought so-and-so won that. And then to have someone come out and be like, yep, I gave it 10-9 to so-and-so. Or I gave it 10-9 to, you know, the blue corner because of his takedown, even though neither of them were very productive. Like, especially someone like Eddie Bravo, who does the Eddie Bravo Invitational and is used to, like, ground skills and different things like that. Yeah, I really enjoyed being able to have them score in between rounds, but I wanted to get your opinion before you take a big drink out.
It was almost gone. It was going to be the last one, and I was going to put it down.
I was actually waiting, just like in a car. I was waiting, yeah.
So, you mean like having like an on-panel expert?
Yeah. Or someone just give their opinion between rounds and say, I gave it to 10-9 to Liddell because of this.
It's interesting. I mean...
Do you think it's just the age of the sport? People back then didn't necessarily know how well it was, like, how it was scored or how it necessarily worked, so they had someone there to, like, walk you through it?
Even now, we don't know how it's scored.
But that's just... I mean, we technically know. It's just the judges, we don't know how they're actually going to score any fight.
Not really. I don't know how anything's weighted.
So I know eventually we're going to get into the judging.
Somebody
and
could
the
throw
and that the point the what is it the half points instead of a full point.
Well, I was thinking like I was thinking more. You get like somebody that just outstrikes somebody for half a round, and then the other guy, out of desperation, gets a takedown and holds the guy down. Which do you weight higher? Depends on what he does when he's on top. But most usually, if he's been getting pummeled, he's kind of just using it as recovery. He's not throwing a ton of shots, but it looks like he controlled the latter half of it. And so I just don't know how you weight it. I honestly don't. And then they always say that octagon control also factors in. How is that weighted?
The center of the whoever takes the center of the octagon and controls it is usually how like
sure, but like I mean, what if the guy on the outside's throwing? I mean, because
Anderson Silva sits against the
Silva
fence.
Sits back there all the time, like, and he's throwing more punches and landing more punches.
But that's the difference between point fighters and defensive fighters. So you look at Carlos Condit against Nick Diaz, where Condit showed what would be considered octagon control by just standing in the center and landing a couple and then stalking him but staying in the center of the ring. Like, he won by points based on octagon control and picking and stuff like that, even though Nick Diaz, I think, actually won. He landed more strikes, I believe it was, and if I'm wrong, let me know. And there's a lot of people like Todd, our good buddy, who was like, no, Nick Diaz was more aggressive. He ended up having a better fight, but it was because Condit looked like he was controlling the fight more than he actually was, based on where they were in the ring and so on and so forth. So
with that being said, to answer your question, if somebody's there to explain, because even after watching almost, what, 10 years now, more than 10 years of MMA, I honestly don't know how they score it. It's kind of like Chael Sonnen said, he thinks it's the best scoring. I heard him say this a while ago, I don't know, it was like over a year ago. He thinks it's the best scoring how it currently is, and we don't need more defined rules. It's pretty much just an eye test. You look at it, and you decide who you think won the fight or won the round, and then you give them a 10-9.
However, when you go to a different country, you've got to do it slightly different.
Not if you bring your own guys.
Yeah, but then everyone says the UFC brings their own guys, and the UFC's rigging fights, and it's the UFC judges. Like, what they actually, I can't remember where it was it Brazil, or was it in Europe where Dana White actually pulled one of the judges?
I think it was in Asia, wasn't it?
They brought their own judges, and they did such a poor job. He was like, nope, you're done.
Mm-hmm. But that's the thing, though. Like, I almost agree with that. It doesn't need to be more defined. You need to look at it and be like, no, I think he won that round.
We need more people that actually know what they're doing. Isn't there the story about one of the ladies in the Texas Commission is a judge only based on the fact that her husband used to be in the boxing commission or used to be a boxing prize fighter or something like that? So she's been elected onto the commission to judge fights based solely on that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think they need to start. It needs to be like referees, where they need to start doing training and they need to start paying them real money, like to do the commission stuff.
Where I don't know. I think if you don't really define it, you can't really have point fighters to a certain extent, you know. Like, and if you just let if you just do like the eye test and be like, nah, I mean, it looks like he landed more, he controlled more, he didn't run as much, like, and there's probably somebody out there being like, no, you're both wrong. There's clear defined rules already, and you need to figure them out. Like, there might be, but like, we've all seen those be completely overpassed if there is.
The weird part, too, is that the judges are so close to the ring when that's, like, the worst place to actually watch a fight. Like, yeah, they have their screens and they watch them on the screens right next to it, but put them up above in a little press box or whatever, or, you know what I mean?
Suspend them right above.
Put them on glass where they have to, lay down looking down. But, like, get them out somewhere else where they can actually see the fight. Like, you know, like get them into like a
you can't have them you can't have the fans in front of them. One, you can't have them like the fans like trying to like mess with them and stuff. Like, they need to be front row, and you give them screens. That's pretty much the only way.
And I guess I understand, but I think that they would do it better not being on the front row, because if they're, I've sat cage side and I don't like, not at the UFC, at local events. Not trying to toot my own horn. But
cornered champions.
But I mean, you really can't see very well. Like, I'd rather be just above the cage where you can see the entire thing going on than cage side. And I mean, you even talked. You hear Joe Rogan say, "We can't, from the angle that we're at, this is what it looks like," because they can't. They really can't really see what's going on. They can't see. Wow.
There's no place where you can see everything.
Yeah, it's very difficult. Because even from the side and that's above, any sporting event, when they roll against the cage closest to you, you can't really see them.
There's things that you're not going to be able to see regardless. I think the best thing that you can do is put them front row and give them a screen. It's pretty much it.
Speaking of the people closest to the ring in a very scary job, those dudes with like those 200-pound cameras on the corners that are like, if these guys pound right into this corner hard enough, I'm just standing on this like little bench. I'm going to go down.
We talked about this last week, right? They have to be anchored in. They have to.
It would make a lot more sense if they were anchored in.
Can you imagine?
A Travis Brown versus Alistair Overeem and both those dudes going right against that corner pad?
Mm-hmm.
That's frightening.
Or what was the one that was at Shane Carwin that like Brock Lesnar just bull rushed him into the corner?
Yeah, and it looked like the whole cage was going to fall?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's absolutely terrifying. If I had that, not only that piece of expensive equipment, but if I knew if I went down, chances were that thing would come forward and fall on me and end of my life, I would be a little bit more scared. However, that would be a really cool place to watch the fights. It'd be right on one of those corner cameras. Mm-hmm.
It probably, well, to a certain extent, I think I would get like
really tired from holding the camera.
To hell with, why don't they just prop cameras up there? Why do you need guys?
I don't know. Maybe if something goes wrong, or they zoom in and zoom out. Because, I mean, they have the directors yelling camera one, camera two. Like, you're right. It's not them that are switching it. They just are filming the best that they can. I think it's human intuition. Because they do have to move them a little bit.
I feel like everything could be automated at this point. I could be wrong. I mean, they're the ones that put the shows on, and they've been doing it for years. They get it.
Mm-hmm. Well, like... like you said.
I mean, they're into firing people. They got rid of Stitch. I just figured they're looking for more weight to cut.
Why don't they just hire the T-1000?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or the Google Smart Car in one corner, the T-1000 in another car.
Or just start doing it from a 3D camera above.
The new Japanese sex bots. Like, you could get like a different themed and sponsor in every one. I like it.
No, it's Reebok or nothing.
Well, they could be wearing Reebok. All these sex... well, the sex bot wouldn't, because they'd be naked. But the T-1000 could wear Reebok.
We're digressing a long
way. No, we're not. This is important stuff.
Anyway, so what do you think? So you would or you wouldn't like someone scoring after each round?
Yeah, like I said,
they explained it. Like he said, you know, that was pretty close except for the takedown that he got towards the end of the round. I would probably score towards it. I mean, and that's what they did in the Titan FC fights too.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, it makes you feel smart. Because I was always like, yeah, that's how I scored it for this exact same reason.
Good job.
Yay me. And then when the judges are like, split decision, and you're like, split decision.
I like I said, I kind of like how it is now. I'd like to hear somebody's perspective on like if they were there, and just to hear like their mentality on how they scored one fight to another. Like if they were like, this one is, I'd be more interested to compare throughout the whole night all their different input that they have for each one of the fights. I think that would be pretty interesting, and just see kind of their mentality. Because I don't ever think about it. Like, I always think about the fight on a fight basis, or on a round-by-round basis. I never think of it, like, as a whole, like, oh, well, earlier I scored this round for this person this way, so obviously I'm going to do the same. Like, I always get into the moment of each fight. Mm-hmm. And so it'd be kind of interesting to see kind of, like, a consistent...
I think they should do, like, swimming. 10, 9, 8.
What do you mean? I don't know. What?
I was just joking. And then you add up who gets the most points, and then they win.
I don't know swimming.
Come on, man.
I'm sorry.
You're so uncultured.
I know.
You must hate America because Michael Phelps has a ton of medals and
probably literally a ton at this point.
They're pretty heavy. They're pretty heavy. I think he sold most of them for weed by now, but which buys you a ton of weed.
He gets weed for free.
What weighs more, a ton of weed or a ton of medals?
They're the same.
They both weigh a ton. All right, moving on. One of the biggest rumors, not even rumors, one of the biggest things kind of on Twitter to pop up that we luckily caught on to. Somebody tweeted at Dave Scholler, the UFC PR guy, about Holly Holm, and he said, when is Holly Holm's next fight? And he said, we're working on it. It should be, I actually have it. Hold on. I have it right here on my phone. Let's see what the word for word actually said. So he said, that's my wife hiking today. UFC, get Holly a fight is what King Carnage told him. You know, MMA fans, how great they are. And Dave Scholler said, we did. Stay tuned. So it actually sounds like Holly Holm does have a fight.
UFC 200 coming at you live.
They are still missing, like Chell said, they are still missing a fight from UFC 200. They could still plug one in. I don't think it would be main card, though. I think it would be either prelims, FS1 prelims, or even Fight Pass. However, there are three events that weekend with the Tough 23. There's the Fight Pass card on Friday. And then, Thursday, and then UFC 200 on Saturday. So Holly Holm can fight that weekend. So there's two things that I thought about, and two things that are going around the internet. One of which is if Cyborg beats Leslie Smith like in the first round and gets relatively no damage, that potentially she'll fight on that weekend against Cyborg. And then the other thing is there's actually something like that. There's a female fighter who just beat Amanda Nunes, or just lost to Amanda Nunes, who's fighting Miesha Tate. Mm-hmm. So if you were to put Holly Holm against, I think her name's Valerie or something like that, Shevchenko, if she were to fight against Holly Holm on that fight, or on, say, Thursday, they could build up the Miesha Tate fight. And they could be like, oh, Holly Holm's fighting off of one loss, the same Russian female fighter that's fighting against that lost to Amanda Nunes.
I pretty much
so it gives more of a story to that fight. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You're right. I just feel like it's Ronda. I just have this feeling.
No, and man,
I
know she's pregnant. 7 weeks now, according.
She shouldn't fight if she's pregnant.
She said she's.
It's my medical opinion. I googled WebMD.
Should you fight if you're pregnant? What I heard is it could lead to enough stress to actually just induce labor. So if you should actually fight in your ninth month.
No, you just spicy food.
That's true.
Cosette told me that.
Or just have sex. Apparently that's supposed to induce labor as well. Yeah.
You know what else induces labor? A doctor.
That's true. That's true, too.
But not before your due date. We won't pay for it in the insurance world.
There you go. You have to be induced after your due date. I don't think it's Ronda Rousey. I really don't, based on the fact that the last thing that we read from her is that she's still grieving and she's not ready to come back and fight. And that was less than a month ago.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, what are you seeing on SureDog?
Oh, I lost it.
Good. It was probably in the forums anyway, because that's where the
pregnancy
thing came in.
No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't.
It was, wasn't it?
No.
It was, no, in, the, it was in the forums. Sherdog forums, the dregs of society.
I would just like...
Step above the underground.
The women's division's getting awesome right now. You have Cyborg coming in. You've got the rock, paper, scissors of Holly, Misha, Ronda. And then you've also got... What's her face? The one that's husband.
Cyborg?
No, the one that, that passed away, killed himself.
Kat Zingano.
Kat Zingano. You always have her as kind of like a like an outside threat. I really like that division right now, and I would really like to see it starting to get kind of fleshed out. So if we could get Ronda Holly.
So I don't think it's going to happen.
Shut up, man.
But building off of that, what
why
do you,
would you?
What do you think about the fight at 125? There is at Ottawa. Remember the last time we said who should fight Holly? It was Valerie Letourneau. She's actually fighting Joanna Calderwood, and they're fighting at 125. And there was actually a rumor that they might add the 125 division, the flyweight. So they would have a 135, a 125, and a 115.
Isn't that what Michelle Waterson fights at?
That's
Waterman.
I think there's a lot of them. But the hard part is I think you take a lot of...
She's Adam weight. Adam weight.
Yeah. That's 110?
I think it's 105. I don't know.
It might be 105. I know that... So they've got 115. Now they have this 125. They have a 135 technically. And then they're fighting a 140 with Cyborg.
I would say hold off on 115 for a minute.
It seems like... If you do that, I think you have to buy out Invicta.
Why?
Because Invicta basically has the best of those women in those three divisions. And if you just... Invicta came about because the UFC wasn't able to present any female fighters. And I think now that they're on UFC Fight Pass, I think if they bought out Invicta, you have all of the best women in the world under your organization, and you have your 115, your 125, and your 135. That's the only way to do it. Otherwise, you don't do one fight at 125. You either... absorb all of the best women fighters in the world, or you don't have a 125 division. Because how? I mean, when they win, Valerie has only lost one fight, I think, in her last five. It's not like you're going to push her up to 135 and give her a title shot after just fighting 125. That doesn't make any sense.
I haven't really thought about it.
Right? I mean, it's a very interesting thing. It would make a ton of sense. This actually broke. There's a, I think it's MMA Metric. At MMA Metric on Twitter, and they are actually now becoming a cult following on Reddit because they broke the Nate Diaz, Conor McGregor after Ariel Helwani. They broke the 125, and there was another one that they broke too. Basically, it's this one Twitter account that doesn't follow anyone and has like 25 followers or something, and it's a lime with a Ninja Turtle mask. And they there's like rumors that it's someone in the, that someone that works at the UFC that's tweeting certain things out through here. Because they just tweeted, we might be seeing a 125 division soon or something like that. And then this fight was announced. It's interesting. And now they're becoming a cult following on Reddit. They're getting a lot of trust behind them. Anyway, but no, it's definitely a very interesting conversation. And, I mean, they already took a lot of the 135 Invicta fighters as is. And then they made their own 115 division. And I think they left 125 alone because Invicta already had most of them. And like the Adam weight, I think are also mostly in Invicta.
Hmm.
And if they just absorbed it, they would have more female fighters than you would need. And I think a lot of Invicta fighters are like 1 in 3 and different things like that. Because it's kind of like Titan FC. You have the ones that are on their way up, and then you have the ones that they have to fight against because those are the only ones that will take the fights for $2,500.
Mm-hmm.
But with how well the women are doing and how many exciting fights there are at the women's 125, and I think you would see a lot of those 135ers drop down to 125. I think that's a more comfortable range for them. I don't think Holly would. I don't think Ronda Rousey would. I think Misha Tate might be able to make 125.
You think?
Maybe.
But like, what about what?
But like Chelsea, or not Chelsea, sorry, Courtney said. Courtney. Crystal said it's a lot harder for women to drop weight.
What's her face? The one that mocked Rhonda's dad killing himself?
Betch.
Yeah. Can she make 125?
I bet you she can make 125.
I bet you she could.
I bet you. Betcha. A lot of them, I bet she could make 125. Like I said before, I think they went on The Ultimate Fighter. A lot of them were 125 fighters, and they fight at 135 so they can fight in the UFC. You know, for them to put on this fight, they probably were like, you know what? though we both are in the 135 division, it would be a much more comfortable fight for both of us to fight at 125. Like, maybe they're coming in at 127. They might only weigh 130, you know?
I thought the Letourneau fight was at...
It's at 125.
Well, I thought that one before was at 115. I'm all over the place
right now. That might also change it as well. I don't know if it was at 115, because we were going to say that she was going to fight Joanna, or she was going to fight... It might have been that.
She's at 115.
Because she just lost to Joanna.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So then 115 was too hard. So they might give them a 125. I think
I'm all over the place right now. I'm good thing we have internet, because if we were doing this normal, I'm out of. I'm messing up the levels with the headphones.
Yeah.
But I mean, I hate that much weight between weight classes. But the same
pounds? Or you 20 pounds.
20 pounds
for women, that's huge.
Well, and even men, man, like the from 170 to 205, only having one weight class in between that's crazy.
But if you're a dude with 5% body fat, 5 to 8%, that's normal.
No, I understand that it's harder for women, but even still for guys, like Rashad's been fighting out of his weight class forever.
Yeah.
And he's still done great, you know, but I don't know. I'm for more weight classes, but on the other hand, I'm not.
I'm for more women's weight classes. I mean, men, I guess there's only one weight class that you can really add, and that would be between 205 and the 245. And then it's too shallow.
Another heavyweight.
Between light heavyweight and heavyweight, they would have a division. So the Cain Velasquez, Junior Dos Santos, Verdooms, and then you would have, back in the day, the Brock Lesnar, Shane Carwin.
You don't think they eventually want to do a 165, then to 175, 185, 195, 205?
I hope not. Because when you get that big, it's now when the UFC starts to compete with the NFL for guys that are that big and that athletic, like we've discussed, I think probably 4 or 5 times on this podcast, when they finally get to that point where it's like, I can either go to the NFL and make $13 million, you know, or I'm a lesser athlete in the NFL, so I'm going to be making $650,000 a year to be on the practice squad, or I can go into the UFC and make $1 to $2 million. They're definitely going to go to the UFC instead. Because practice squad, they're making $500,000.
Mm-hmm.
Jeez.
But no, the way that things are going, they're looking like they want multiple weight division champions. I think that they're kind of getting sold on that with Connor and Frankie now talking about being a 3-division champion.
So have Joanna go up 10 pounds and win 125?
Well, not even just... I'm talking about all of them. I'm more talking about 170 to 205. Like, for Connor to go up to 170, it would have been a lot easier for him just to go to 165,
yeah,
instead of 170. And so... And then it's just easier to move around, I think, in those weight classes.
So you fight where you're comfortable rather than in a specific...
I don't necessarily want them to. Like you said, it gets too shallow at that point, and they're not there yet. But I feel like, no, they eventually want to get there, right?
I don't think so.
You don't think they want to add more weight classes?
I think they want to make the weight classes more fluid. So if both people have an easier time making 165, then they would fight at 165, and then they would have to pick whether they wanted to go up to 170 or down to 155 to fight for, say, a title.
I don't know. I think it would just be better. I think they want to have multiple champions and in multiple weight divisions. It's just better for marketing and stuff like that, and it's easier if the weight classes are closer together.
I would like to see how they came up with the weight classes. Because having 205 to 185 to 170, I mean, it sounds like it's about 15 pounds, but like...
Well,
and then it drops to 10. I mean,
I think they just
155, 145, 135.
Well, that's not how they did it. Originally, they had 155, 170, 185, 205,
yeah,
and then 265. They didn't have the lower weight classes that were in 10 increments.
Yeah.
So what I'm assuming is they look at it, it's a depth problem, and so they looked at where they could make them and still have like a competitiveness. So I think it was more of what you have available to you, not what you want. And what I think they would eventually want, just for people to understand it better, like the casual fan, is every 10 pounds have a weight class. I would imagine that's where they want it. It's more easy to understand, and
so you would, instead of
you also get more belts.
So you would do, instead of 170, you would go 65, and then you would go 75, 85,
95,
205.
And then I feel like they'd have to do something with heavyweight, put something in the middle. I would assume.
That would change things up significantly, though.
Mm-hmm.
Just because dropping an extra 5 pounds is nothing like dropping an extra 10 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
When you're like 205, you know. And I see, now we're getting into things that I'd never thought about that. And the higher weights, I thought about it, but I never thought about just restructuring them every 10 pounds, which would make a ton of sense, but I think there would be too many weight divisions. But somebody might...
Boxing has more. Boxing has them like not even that far apart. I think they need to get to a certain place, and I don't think they're there yet. It's kind of like the MLS trying to get more teams. Like, they're now pushing for it because they're in a place to do it, but you have to build it up first. And the women's is more lucrative and easier because there's a bigger pool right now. I think we're a ways away from it, but I think that is the end goal, is to eventually get 10-pound increments.
So are you interested in watching Holly Holm fight anyone before Ronda Rousey?
Yeah, I am. Yeah. Holly's a great practitioner.
Get her back in the ring?
Yeah, she's a great practitioner. She had a great fight against Misha. She made a stupid error, to her admission. We've digressed a lot on this one. I'm glad we're coming back to that. Absolutely. I think Holly's my favorite female fighter. I love watching her. I love her stand-up. I would like to see her get a little bit better takedown defense, and I think she will. She's a very good athlete.
Mm-hmm. She's got a perfect team there with Yoel Romero there being there as well. Her and him probably get along really well, coming from a religious background.
You know, we talked about on the Spanish podcast about...
He's a Cubano. I don't know why we didn't bring him up. Anyway.
Well, no, this is... So, of the Hispanic... fighters. Did you know Frank Mir's dad's Cuban?
I did not know that.
He said that on your welcome. I didn't know that either. He's like, yeah, my dad's Cuban. And I was like, wait, what?
Mir?
I'd never have thought that.
Yeah, especially because he's that big of a dude. But I guess
Well, so is Yoel Romero.
Look at Carlos Condit. Look at Florian. I mean, he's a Peruvian. I mean, there's a lot of them that you wouldn't guess based on their... I mean, like they said, Josh Thompson, they threw in there too. Like, it's definitely interesting to see. So let's talk briefly about Connor's last tweet and then get into the Rotterdam card, which is coming up on Sunday the 8th. So if you haven't seen it, which I'm sure that you have, and we're not even going to be the first ones talking about it, Conor McGregor texted again or sent out an Instagram of the Nate Diaz fight. Sorry, sound like USA Today Sports. Nate Diaz fight, where mostly the video shows him landing more punches than Nate does at that time, and he says,
who landed more rear nakeds?
It only took one. Who wants to watch these other bum fighters fight? Give the fight that people want. Bring it back or whatever it says. And I'm great with 200. I actually think that the headlining card between John Jones and DC is a much more desirable fight. Of course, I like to watch Conor fight. I'm a Conor fan.
Well, it means something.
Yeah. More than just pride.
Yeah, Nate.
Well, pride and a belt.
Well, I mean, and the whole thing's about pride, so I don't want to take anything away from that fight. I'm going to watch it. I think it'd be fun, but like... there's a lot more writing on this and pride. Like,
so what do you, let's get in more specifically. What do you think about the Instagram specifically rather than the fight?
This is the problem is like, and I didn't really talk about it a ton the last 2 weeks when it's gotten brought up, and I kind of meant to. This is the problem. Regardless, and this just compounds it, if he really wants to fight Nate, so you specifically asked for this fight, and Justin's picking a fight with a microphone.
Yeah, I just punched my mic right in the mouth.
You specifically asked for this fight at 170, and then you went to train, and you didn't want to be bothered to do promotion. And so you lost the fight of the biggest payday possible at 200. And then, so what are we going to do if you're on 201, 202, 203? You're going to still... Is it just the guy? Was it the guy that you wanted to make sure you're training extra hard for, or is this something that you want going forward? I assume it's something that he wants going forward.
It's just this.
Well, then... Okay, so now he's asking for the fight, so what's going to happen next time? Nothing's resolved. It's not like he got what he wanted. The UFC didn't get what they wanted. I'm sure that UFC would love to make that fight at this point, but like, are you... so now they make it again. Let's say they make it at 202 or Madison or wherever the hell they're going to make it. He's going to want training without having to do all the PR stuff again.
If I were the UFC, here's how I would do it. Now, having all of this, having now a bad relationship where Connor's drunk texting his ex-girlfriend, I put him on a 201-202 card against Nate. 200's already going to sell a ton of tickets. You don't have to worry about it. DC versus Jones is a huge fight. It's not going to sell as many as Connor, but then now you have your next pay-per-view and you have your next story. Connor and Nate are still going to fight. They fight on a different card, and you make that much money on your next card. I mean, it's a business, and then you don't put them on MSG, but you put them on, you know, some other card right around MSG or the next.
That's November. That's a far ways away. That's a long ways away.
He'll fight one more time and then could still make the MSG card.
But why? Why go through this whole episode?
Power and pride. It's a power struggle.
But then you lost it.
Yeah, he did. He absolutely lost. Which is good on
the
UFC.
We talked about it.
I'm not a UFC fan. Well, I say that, but if I were to be offered the job as a community manager, I would do it in a second. But it's one of
those
things.
You're like all those guys that hate EA. All the gamers that hate EA. You are that with the UFC.
No, because I'm not getting on Reddit and telling everyone to not buy the next pay-per-view and then complaining.
Oh, there's plenty of people that don't do that that still hate EA. I was one of them.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that...
Up until Battlefront came out.
Super funny digression. Mirror's Edge Catalyst. Once again, I work for EA. I had it legally from EA. If I talk about reviews or anything of their games, I'm supposed to actually state that just in case someone sees it and I lose my job. So back when this game, so I played the beta, and it's actually a decently fun game. But the bad guy in the game used to look just like Andrew Wilson from EA.
Who?
Andrew Wilson.
No, what game?
Mirror's Edge Catalyst.
I should not have said who.
Mirror's Edge Catalyst is a game created by EA. The bad guy in that game used to look just like the CEO of EA Games. When they first started releasing videos of this at the gamer conferences at E3 and things, people started tweeting about how it looked like Andrew Wilson. It no longer looks the same. On the beta that just came out, the closed beta, the guy, they've restructured his face and what he looks like. So I just thought it was very funny.
It is. That's stupid, though. I would kind of like, I mean, I guess, whatever, but I would kind of play that up. Yeah, I'm a bad guy, whatever. What do you want?
Well, Andrew Wilson rolls jiu-jitsu, and the Holly Holm fight, he actually sat next, not that one, the one right before the Holly Holm fight, he actually, when the game was about to come out, he was sitting next to Dana White at one of the fights. And I mean, so he actually... You figure that the UFC game would be better with how big of a fan I think Andrew Wilson is of fighting, of a practitioner. He actually rolls jiu-jitsu and is supposed to be pretty good. He's supposed to be very prideful, though. Apparently, he hates losing. But well, if you're a CEO, and the world's youngest, richest CEO.
Is he?
Something like that. He's from Australia originally. Anyway, that's a huge digression. But yeah, so...
Going back to just the whole Instagram thing, like I was saying, I just think it's... At the end of it, he didn't accomplish anything now.
Nope.
And I mean, I feel like he had a lot of people on his side. He could have done a lot of stuff, but...
I'm definitely for higher fighter pay, and I agree. However,
that's not what he wanted.
I'm kind of... Yeah, for him, you know, you're right. However, and like... Taking this down a million notches to like normal fighter level, not Conor McGregor, by him getting what he wants, he starts a progression of other fighters finally coming out saying what they want. However, in this case, I'm glad the UFC was like, no, we're not going to do it. You're going to play by our rules. This is how this is going to work.
And like I said, I said this last week, I think they handled it poorly. The media handled it poorly. Connor handled it poorly. The UFC handled it poorly.
The media just wanted the hits and the reads and the clicks.
I know, but like, and I mean, we've talked about it 3 weeks in a row too. So I mean, it's like the same for us. We're doing the same thing, but like on the one hand though, nothing was accomplished by anybody. The UFC lost 40% of the pay-per-views that they could have had. I mean, a number that I pulled out of nowhere and just threw it at you guys. But I mean, like, there's a substantial amount that's going to be lost.
Let's put it against the John Jones OSP fight. And obviously, it was OSP, but they did Nate Diaz versus Conor McGregor, and then they did the John Jones fight. Mm-hmm. And I think that there was almost 10 times as many buys on the Conor McGregor fight than there was the John Jones fight.
Wow.
It was pretty astronomical, and I think that's part of the reason that they pointed it out. It was on Twitter like the next day or whatever when they went into buys. It was like 200,000 compared to like 23 or something like that, compared to like 23,000
buys.
It was significant. It might have been 2.3 as compared to 2,000 or compared 20, to 20
200.
Yeah, something like that. It was almost 10 times. Sorry for my math being so terrible.
I'm going to have to look that up because those numbers seem a little bit sketchy. But the point is they're going to lose a ton. So the UFC loses a ton. Yeah. Millions off of it. Conor did not get anything.
He loses 10 million.
His next fight will be the same amount because it's his contract, right? The only problem is he also gets pay-per-view points. And,
so take him off pay-per-view, throw him on Fox.
You can't.
Why not? Contractually, you can't?
Yeah, it's contract.
Oh, I didn't know that.
His contract is he gets the back end on pay-per-views.
Yeah, so if you don't put him on a pay-per-view, you don't have to pay him the pay-per-view back end.
There's got to be something else for that. There's no way that's just missed by all parties.
Like at RDA, he's a champion.
Oh, what about...
Speaking of which...
No, I mean, like, you can't... I'm just... He doesn't get points, though.
No, well, here's what I've learned. Apparently, most champions get pay-per-view points. One of the reasons why Daniel Cormier, who was on MMA Hour, said he didn't want Conor McGregor on this card, not like that, like... But he was saying as soon as, if that card were to be added, it would get really wishy-washy with pay-per-view points because all of the champions on the card get pay-per-view points. So he gets them, Misha would get them, and then Conor would also get them. And so you'd have those three that would actually have to split the pay-per-view points on that. So they are liable to make more money with Conor McGregor not on that card just because they had to split it three ways instead of two ways. So yeah, I mean... RDA, I don't know how that's going to work out, but I would assume if you really wanted to screw him over, you could throw him on an FS1 card where Fox makes, you make all the money off of advertising and he doesn't make any pay-per-view points. But yeah, then like you still sell a ton of tickets because it's on Fox. And put it out in Ireland. You know, give him one thing that he wants, put it in Ireland and make a ton of money.
I don't know.
You could sell tickets astronomical for that card. Well, I had one more thing that I was going to bring up. Oh, no, that was it, the pay-per-view points. Let's get into Rotterdam, unless you've got...
No, we're good.
Unless you've got an exclamation point to put on there.
No, it's just, I mean, like I said, I think everybody lost, as it said, nowhere.
Here's the fight I really want to get into. Gunnar Nelson versus Albert Tumanov. Most people have Tumanov winning, most MMA hardcores have Tumanov winning this fight because Gunnar Nelson has the two losses that he has. One was the Damian Maia and one was the Rick Story. Rick Story was an interesting fight. However, Tumanov has like sputtered off, I think, like five or six in a row. The thing that bothers me about this is the level of competition that they've fought and the level of competition that Gunnar lost to was much higher. So just quick read off real quick. These are Albert Tumanov's fights right here. His last five wins are Anthony Lapsley, Matt Dwyer, Nicholas Musoski, Alan Joban, who I know, and then damn it, Sherdog. Why do you have so many weird ads? And then Lorenz Larkin.
That's why I would go to Wikipedia.
So Alan Joban and Lorenz Larkin are two decently well-known names, but none of them are. There might be close to the top 15, but I mean those aren't. They're good fighters to beat. They're on their way up. They might eventually be top 10. However, Gunnar Nelson has beat. He beat Zach Cummings. He beat Jorge Santiago. He beat Brandon Thatch. He lost to Rick Story by a split decision, and that's back when Rick Story was at his heyday before he really started to just slide. And then he lost to Damian Maia by unanimous decision without having to throw any punches. So his losses are higher than Tumanov's wins, and his wins, I think, are at an equal or higher level than Tumanov's wins. And so that's kind of what I would get at. A lot of people are going against Gunnar Nelson because of the two losses he's had in his last three fights. But I think he's a small 170 and you have that going against him. But I think he's going to win. And I think it's a way, depending on what the odds are, a lot of people are, I think, betting against him because he's a favorite. And they're taking that, if there's anything that they're going to parlay, if there's anything that they're going to try and make a buck on, it's going to be that fight.
I think he's going to lose. But I like him. So, I mean, I had no problem with him winning this fight. He's still young, man. He's 27. He's hitting his prime. Even if he loses this fight, like, he had a split decision with Rick Story and had a decision with Damian Maya.
Yeah.
And I mean, did anybody expect anything different with him and Maya?
And that's what they got into, fight IQ. He wanted to fight Damian Maya because he thought his jiu-jitsu was equivalent or better, and it wasn't. That whole thing was supposed to be a jiu-jitsu match to test it out, and he was like, half the battle, man.
Is Damian Maya the best jiu-jitsu practitioner that UFC's ever had?
Vinny Magnilharis, but he couldn't fight. So if you go like the UFC, yes, Damian Maya's the best.
He's so good.
And the thing that pisses me off is they're like, you shouldn't have took that fight. It's fight IQ. And it's like, and the Irish were in on it. Niall and Fred were like, they don't care about fight IQ. It's a whole different thing. They want to test themselves. They want to see how good they actually are. They're not just trying to fight to win. They're fighting to be the best or fight the best on at a certain way.
Well, it's kind of like we were getting into earlier. It's not about record. It's about runs. And there's so many people that have had terrible losses, and then they've come back. Robbie Lawler, Verdum. Like, Verdum, would he have been in the same place if he wouldn't have lost to Alistair Overeem and changed his striking? Gunnar Nelson probably learned more from the Damian Maya fight than probably any other fight that he's ever had. I assume he would probably tell you the same thing. Damian Maya probably said the same thing about Anderson Silva. Like, there's these certain losses that you have to... Matt Serra versus GSP.
Or, yeah, Damian Maya getting knocked out and being like, no, I'm done doing that.
Yeah, most of the stuff, like, most of the defining... So, and that's the thing. So, fight IQ is a stupid thing, I think. Like, you have to have some... You have to be prudent in a certain sense. But you also have to take fights and you have to test yourself, because a loss is not the end of the world in MMA. It's almost understood that you're going to lose. Like, you're going to...
It's just how you lose and to who you lose to. And he hasn't lost to anyone other than Rick Story. But you have to remember, Rick Story at that time was still moving up the top 10 ladder.
His striking's not bad either. He's another karate guy, right?
Rick Story is a wrestler.
No. I know Rick Story. I meant Gunner, yeah.
Gunner, yeah, he's known for BJJ, but yeah, he's not a bad striker.
He's a black belt, but
yeah.
he kind of has like that same karate stance, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting that that's where Connor was getting ready for the Nate fight.
Yeah. It's actually weird to me that they were like, he wanted to test his BJJ against Damian Maya, and I was like, I thought he was a striker. So it showed kind of my lack of fight IQ as well. During that time, so
but it's the other thing though too is it's. I mean, it could have went the other way for him. And what if he wins that fight by submission?
Mm-hmm. And then he looks excellent and gets a title fight immediately. And Damian Maya is then knocked out of title contention, even though he's got six in a row.
Well, and that's one of the things that Frank Mir was also talking about on Your Welcome. They were talking about one of the first fights that he had. And they're like, you're going against such and such guy who at the time was the best Brazilian jiu-jitsu practitioner probably the UFC had ever seen, and you went in and submitted him. You were a local guy that they threw on the card. Why did you take this fight? And he's like, honestly, I was too young to know any different.
Yep.
And it just, I mean, that defined his career, you know?
Because you won.
And if you're an unknown guy like that, you're an unknown commodity, which he wasn't when he came to the UFC. I heard about him, which I don't hear about most people until they're in the UFC. I heard about him before.
Yep.
So, I mean, he came from a little bit different background, but they don't know how to prepare for you. They don't know what you're all about. But, I mean, taking him losing to Damian Maya is stupid. Like, to say that he shouldn't have taken the fight based
fight
on
IQ.
That. Yeah, that's it. I don't like that.
Okay. So,
especially because he didn't take any damage.
To finish up real quick, who do you got, Alistair Overeem or Andrei Arlovski?
Arlovski.
Really?
Yep.
By knockout, I'm guessing.
Yep.
Which round?
Second.
I'm taking Overeem by knockout, probably before the end of the first.
So you want to see Verdum Overeem again?
Yeah, I like Verdum. And now that he's getting his feet back under him and learning he can't just stand and get hit in the face, I think he's gonna be doing all right. Going back and watching his fights against like Vitor Belfort and stuff, it makes me really appreciate him more as a fighter. Watching him fight Verdum and be like, you know what, Verdum, quit laying on your back. I would like to see him win. Andre Lasky, once again, has been around since that around time, too. This to me, if this fight was 10 years ago, it would be a whole different beast. This would be like one of the biggest fights that they could sell. So it's interesting now that where it is. And I don't understand why Stefan Struve and Antonio Silva. I guess I do, because Stefan Struve's from the Netherlands.
Fight nobody asked for.
But he's from the Netherlands, so you understand why he's on there. But
I understand why Struve's on there, but I don't understand why Silva's on there.
Because they think he might actually be able to beat Silva. They want him to win.
They should have kept Rothwell on. No, what's not Rothwell.
Gabriel Gonzaga?
Rosholt. They should have kept Rosholt on and put him on that.
So they could not fight at all. Who you got? Antonio Silva or Stefan Struve?
Struve.
I hope Struve wins. I like him. I feel bad that he's been knocked out so many times at 22 years old, though.
These are guys with the epitome of why I don't like the heavyweight division.
Yeah. Yeah. Two more fights that I'm interested in on this card. Where is it? Rustam Khabibov and Chris Wade. Chris Wade's on a 6-fight win streak. Only lost the one fight. And then Rustam Khabibov's last loss was to Benson Henderson, and he came in on short notice, and I think stepped up a weight. I think, but I might be wrong. But he lost to Benson Henderson pretty handedly. But I mean, good on him. I mean, he had really poor fight IQ because he would have never got in that fight if, you know, knowing what he knew.
We got to get rid of finding these women in Poland.
Well, they,
I can't pronounce that either. Kowal Kowekiks. Carolina, and they also have a KK name. They have a JJ name. Apparently, they're
Heather Joe Clark. I have a feeling might get a little beat up here.
I just
sweet girl.
Well, makes sense.
She's 8-0.
But
Europe fights different, man.
No, they're women Poland's about the alliterations. Joanna Jarczyk. They got Carolina Kowalowicz.
Kowalowicz.
Hey, and Walla. Koala. I'll see you in a Koala Walla.
Koala Wallowitz. But that the other fights, there's a couple fights on the beginning of the card where guys have lost two in a row or one in a row, and they're fighting for their contracts. So those ones might get exciting because sometimes when you have to fight for your contract.
The Fight Pass card isn't bad. They got Horiguchi on it, Eves Edwards.
Have you seen the Willie Gates fight where he...
Oh, that's totally, Leon Edwards. My bad. Sorry, go ahead.
He totally... sucker punches the guy?
No.
They're walking away from each other, and the referee, I can't remember, once again, defend yourself at all times. It shows them they're walking almost perpendicular, and he just jumps out and punches in the face, and they actually zoom in on Fertitta's face, Lorenzo Fertitta's face, and he throws his arms up and goes, what? Like, basically, it was a huge cheap shot, so it's interesting to me that he's even still in there. But that's it. Anything that you're excited to see other than those ones?
No, I actually like this card a lot. And actually, I think the early prelims are pretty good too.
Remember, it's on here in the United States Sunday morning, not Sunday night.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to hang out next weekend.
We'll watch it and then record.
We're going to watch the Man City Arsenal game, depending on if it's at 5:30 or not. And then the next day, we're going to watch the
UFC fights.
UFC fights.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In the morning. Me and you.
Yes, sir.
And then we're going to do this thing.
Yes, sir. Like we always do. Anything else you'd like to discuss?
We discussed it.
Over an hour.
We did it. We made it. No. Appreciate it, everybody. Follow us. Subscribe. We appreciate it. We like interacting with y'all on Twitter.
At OneSpeedMMA on Twitter. Always a good time.
And
tell your friends.
I would... Yeah,
tell your friends about us.
Tell them, and then we'll talk to them as well.
Don't tell them. Don't tell them. You ain't never gotta tell them. Don't tell them.
I don't know what song he's singing. With it.
Anyway, thanks, guys, once again for your support. Bye.
Bye.